Tuesday, May 8th, The Monty Show. I'm Monty, that's
Jake. Hello.
Hello, Jake. A big day on the show. As always, we have got two big games in the NBA tonight. Closeout games for the Rockets and the Warriors. We got to talk about what to do with the Toronto Raptors. We've got to talk about Bron versus Kobe versus Jordan. We've got to talk about Matt Harvey was traded today. Wait until you hear where he went. It will blow your mind. So we got to talk about all that as well. Make sure you find me online, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, TheMontyShow.com. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
So your friend that's a girl is graduating from ASU today.
Yeah, so her like main ceremony was yesterday, and today's the more specialized ceremony from the Cronkite School of Journalism.
Did she invite you yesterday?
She did, but she was like, you don't need to come to this one because it's kind of a pain in the butt, and I would rather you come to this one. So I said, okay, if that's what you want, that's what I'll do.
Great relationship you got there. I'm kidding. I'm just being a jerk, as you know. That's a daily occurrence. Let's talk Jazz and Rockets in an elimination game. Score prediction in Houston. Do the Jazz win any way they extend this series without Exum, without Ricky Rubio, thank you.
Yep.
Your thoughts on this game?
I don't think they. I think the their season ends tonight. I think the Rockets win this game handily. I could see a 10 to 12 point loss for the Jazz. I think they're going to put up a good fight, but at the end of the day, you need guys like, you know, Ricky Rubio. You need, I'm not saying you need Exum's contribution, but you need him to eat up some of those minutes while Mitchell's sitting. And without that, I just don't see it happening. And I think you saw the frustration boil over in the last game. And I think the Jazz just don't have enough firepower, you know. And we talked all show yesterday about officiating and that whole dynamic. We're not getting into that today, but when you add that side of the game into the equation, I think you just start to realize that the Jazz season is coming to an end.
Why don't you want to talk about Flopgate 2018? What's the problem?
It's well documented. I would be frustrated if I was Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz. Like, I get it, but we all know who's going to the Western Conference Finals, and that's the Warriors and the Rockets.
Are these the two best teams in the West?
I think they're the two best teams in the league. I don't think there's anybody else who's better. I think LeBron is dominating in the playoffs, but I also think he hasn't faced a team that's better than him, right? Like, who's better? Who is that? Like, the Pacers put up a great fight, right? Like, that went seven games. Like, that was a great series. But I also think the Cavs weren't executing at a high level the way they did against Toronto, and so that was a cakewalk series for them. Now they're going to get their rest. And I think they just haven't faced anybody who's got an overpowering amount of firepower. They just haven't.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the Jazz do in this game. The New Orleans game is far less intriguing because I think that series is not close. But, you know, I think there's an interesting question on Periscope right now, which is how far away are the Jazz right now? When they're 100% healthy, I think they're probably two elite players away. Once Donovan Mitchell develops, I think they're one elite player away. And there's a big a conversation to be had about Rudy Gobert's contribution on offense. Does Rudy Gobert do enough offensively to contribute on a regular basis for the rest of that ball club? Because I think if Rudy Gobert can become a double-double guy, points and boards, and he can give you two, three blocks a night, I think he becomes a real force in this league, but I don't have confidence he can do that right now.
I mean, who are you really talking about, though? You're talking about Clint Capella. That's who Clint Capella is, right? I mean, he's been that guy for the Rockets. This year he's really been a dominant force, especially against the Jazz. And I feel like if Clint Capella was a Jazz man, this would be a different series, but he's not. And that's not a slight to Rudy Gobert. I just think Rudy's got to be able to shoot the ball. I mean, that's today's NBA, today's game, right? Like, your center has to be flexible enough.
Well, I think he has to be a weapon in the pick and roll. I think that's the real issue. He is, whether that's pick and pop to your point, but I think he has to be able to roll to the basket, catch the bounce pass, and get a shot to the rim. And I think too often he becomes a non-factor in the pick and roll.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's capable of getting the dunk opportunity or the layup opportunity. Like, he's capable of that style of quote-unquote shot. What I'm talking about is having the flexibility to play the pick-and-pop game the way the Capellas. And even their other big man, I can't remember off the top, the makes the corner, the elbow shot for the Jazz. Can't remember his name.
Nene? Derek Favors?
Derek Favors.
Derek Favors.
He needs to be able to do what Favors does. I couldn't pull Derek Favors for some reason.
You confused me on whether it was Rockets or Jazz.
He needs to be able to make the Derek Favors shot in the pick and roll. And once he can do that and they can acquire one more player, it's over. I mean, they're going to win a lot of games.
Well, right now, they don't pick and roll enough, in my opinion, with Rudy Gobert because he's not capable. So yeah. I would focus on the pick and roll. The problem is now, without Ricky Rubio out there, you're really reliant on a mix of guys to bring the ball up. You need Joe Ingles now on the ball instead of off the ball, where I think he's a lot more effective. You have to have Donovan Mitchell bring the ball up. The flexibility and the versatility in this offense is now gone because your two guards are out. And Dante Exum perhaps should be flattered at the point we're making here, which is I think the Jazz will miss him tonight, particularly on defense with James Harden. But I don't think that you're that far off when you talk about, you know, where this Jazz team is. But they're nowhere near the Houston Rockets.
No.
The ability to play big, to play small, to play fast, to play slow, half court, run the floor.
I mean, any style of game, they can play it.
Yeah.
You know, and the real, I guess, looking forward, and not to overlook the Jazz, but, you know, just being realistic, if you project forward into the Golden State series, I mean, that's really why I think people are saying that Golden State's the best team. Because, and you've said this too at length, Golden State can literally play any style of basketball at an elite level, even more so than the Rockets can.
And I think Golden State can isolate James Harden.
Yeah.
He's always going to get his, but against a team like the Warriors, he's not going to get his repeatedly. And I think that's a significant... That's a significant moment. The fact that you can trap him, or you cannot continue to do what teams around the league have been doing, which is going under or giving Harden space or guarding him. You cannot guard James Harden one-on-one. When you do that, you're asking to lose.
Yes.
And I don't think that the Warriors will do that. I would force the Rockets to beat me with Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon. And all those guys are capable, but they're not nearly as capable as James Harden.
Well, and I totally agree with that. And I think the key, one of the biggest things against the Rockets, in my opinion, is eliminating Clint Capella. You know, the way you do that is you play a fast game. You get out in transition. You get that just outstanding elite outlet pass from Draymond Green, and you get into offense, you know, quicker than they can get back to defense. I mean, that's some of the easiest points you're going to get in the NBA. And the reason I say you need to eliminate Capella is because Capella is a force in the paint. He is the Rudy Gobert of that team, except he's a great offensive player as well. And so, you know, for me, the Warriors, to beat the Rockets, are going to have to play quick. And they're going to have to execute offensively. If the Rockets have one of those games where they shoot the lights out from three, that'll be one hell of a shootout. Because I don't know who wins that game then.
Well, I think the other component here is that you've got to find a way to defend on your own. And this Rockets team is a decent defensive team. I think James Harden hurts them defensively, because even when he makes a concerted effort to be a force on defense, he's not. And yes, I think that hurts them. And I look at the way some of these games have gone, and the reason that the Warriors, you know, have had some success is because they don't care if they beat you 124 to 114, as long as they beat you, and they can beat you in a shootout. And that's the thing that I think the Rockets can't do. The Rockets are fine. Like, you know, looking at the regular season matchups, you're fine. If you want to attack the Warriors and score 115 points, that doesn't mean you're going to beat them.
And that's, I mean, and that's kind of the greatness. And I think a lot of Rockets fans and really Dub haters will say, well, look at the regular season record. Look at what the Rockets did to the Warriors in the regular season. And to that, I would just say, look at who was playing for the Warriors, right? Like, they didn't have all their guys playing games together and really being that big-time cohesive starting five that we're used to seeing out of them. And I think it really should be said as well, Curry's still getting his legs under him in the New Orleans series, and he's still putting up good numbers, right? So if you get Curry back full strength, and all of a sudden all five starters are ready to go, like 100%, no getting their legs under him anymore, I mean, I don't know how the Warriors aren't the favorites, but I do think it's going to be a long series.
Well, and I think the bigger question is, how do you defend Chris Paul? because he's the guy that really stands out to me. I think we all know that James Harden's going to get his points. He's going to score between 25 and 30 points a game. I have no doubt about that.
Is that enough?
Yeah, I think it is. As long as Chris Paul is getting his, as long as Trevor Ariza is getting his, that's how you beat teams. If you look at James Harden during the year, averaged 24.5 points a game against Golden State. You know, that's a really good number. In two games, you know, he shot the ball exceptionally well. You can't allow him to shoot 50% from three if you're Golden State, yeah, like he did on you in the regular season. And that's why I say you cannot allow James Harden to be the guy that carries that team.
Yeah.
Double him. Get the ball out of his hand. Foul him when he comes in the paint.
Physical, man. Yeah.
Yeah. When he comes in the paint, you got to foul him. Yeah, I think that's how you beat them. But right now, I look at this game tonight with the Jazz, and that's what I would do. I think the Jazz believe they can win this game tonight, as they should. But I think they have to do it dirty. I think I don't know how you do it, but you've got to hold them under 105, 106 points max.
Yeah.
That's going to be very difficult because I don't know how you defend Chris Paul.
You know, if the Jazz go out and win this game and they extend this series, what does that do to the Rockets, right? Because we've seen – what were we talking about with the Jazz, right? The OKC series got extended, and the Jazz didn't get extra days of rest.
It cost them big time.
And it cost them a game, right? And so I don't know that, you know, if this goes six games, let's say, that it's going to cost the Rockets in game one, but it certainly couldn't hurt the Warriors' chances, right? So I don't know. I think at this point, if you're the Jazz, yeah, you're right. They probably do believe they're – you know, going to win this game. But really, realistically, they're spoilers now with where this series is at.
Sure.
Their only job in life at this point is to make it hard on the Rockets and do the best they can.
I would agree with that. And I fully embrace the idea that the Rockets are the better team here. There's no doubt. And I wrote this and I've said this repeatedly. The conversation around the Jazz-Rockets series is not whether the Jazz are on par with or even to the Rockets. They're not. The Rockets are a better team.
Yeah.
The conversation has always been around, you know, the special treatment that James Harden gets. But that doesn't mean that the Jazz can't win a game. That doesn't mean that the Jazz won't make your life difficult. The Jazz are not just going to roll over and say congratulations and good luck in the NBA Finals.
Right.
That's not who the Jazz are. So they're not like Toronto, who we're going to talk about here in a minute. They're not the Toronto Raptors who just flat quit.
Yeah.
The Jazz are never going to be that team. That's just not who they are. So I think it's very interesting, and it will be very interesting to see how the Jazz come out and play tonight. I don't have a lot of confidence that they can win this game.
No, I mean, I think when you look at the officiating, Donovan Mitchell has gotten in foul trouble with ticky-tack fouls that really shouldn't have been called.
Indeed,
and
he has.
So I will be interested to see, you know, is he in foul trouble in the fourth quarter? I mean, is he carrying five fouls, you know, with, you know, let's say 7-8 minutes left in the fourth quarter? You know, and how does he respond to that? If so, I'm with you. I don't think they win this game. I think it's probably a 110 points that they score tonight. I think it's somewhere in there, and I think the last 5 minutes are probably garbage time.
And if I'm the Jazz, I get every bit of my money on every foul on James Harden.
100%.
I'm not ticky-tack fouling him. And if he wants to jump into me, see, I'm the kind of guy that believes if you're going to flop and jump into me, and I'm going to jump into you. And every chance I get to set a pick on James Harden, it's going to be a hard shot to his ribs.
Yeah.
That I just, when you play the kind of floppy basketball that he plays, there has to be some karmic justice applied to him.
Yeah.
And we'll see if they do that. I don't know if they will do that, but I can't stand the way James Harden plays basketball.
I think it'll be a chippy game, though. If this gets to the half and it's, you know, 15, 20-point lead, it'll be chippy in the second half.
What do you make of New Orleans and Golden State tonight? I think this has been a really entertaining series despite where the series stands.
Yeah.
The brand of basketball has been good. The style of play has been good. How much better is Golden State than New Orleans?
I don't think they're far and away better, but I do think that they're a better team. They've got more talent. I think their team play is better. I mean, when you look at how efficient they are in offense, when you take a second and realize that, you know, KD has been given the reins offensively. They've told him, go out and get it. You know, and we'll work around you. You are the premier scorer on the team, because he is. I mean, Curry may be the three-point threat, and Klay Thompson might be, you know, one of the best spot-up shooters the league's ever seen. But KD is the dynamic offensive threat on the team. And so once he gets aggressive and he puts up 38 points, I mean, you're not winning. And so that's,
I would agree.
That's why I say I think they are the better team. But New Orleans isn't far away. I think they just ran into a buzzsaw.
Well, and I think this is another one of those series that it's very clear that the NBA wants to see Golden State and Houston in the Western Conference Finals, and I think it's very clear that's what we're going to get. It'll be interesting to see how do we find, or what does it look like at the end of this series when these two teams get there. How healthy is Steph Curry? Because I don't see that he's rusty at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's rusty in the fact that he's, like, his shot's rusty. His shot's not rusty. I mean, all he did while he was hurt was shoot the ball, right? Like, that's what you do as an NBA player when you sprain something. You're working, you're strengthening it, you're doing, you know, you're basically just getting stronger the whole time and maintaining your shot and your skills. Where he's rusty is his speed inside the game, right?
Yes.
So, like,
yes,
coming off picks, being fluid. You know, it's when, you know, like, him and whoever they're playing at center, let's say Draymond, are getting that matchup on the wing where Draymond's going to set a pick and Curry's going to play around with a defender. It's those little nuances in the game where he is a little rusty. But with that said, he's still dominating, absolutely dominating when he gets the ball.
And I think it's his ability to run off the picks, those, you know, those blender style runs that he does to get himself free. And I think that's what needs to be tuned up. But what this Warriors team looks like when they finally get to the Western Conference Finals here will be interesting. That Curry-KD dynamic has never been an issue.
Yeah.
Like, you never hear KD or Klay, even Curry. Nobody's complaining about shots on that team. And I think that speaks volumes about Steve Kerr as a coach.
It speaks volumes about who Russell Westbrook is. I mean, when you look at, you know, the KD-Russ relationship when they played together and things were good versus KD's relationship with Steph, with Draymond, and with Klay, it's two different situations. And I think that's why the Warriors are a superior team, because nobody is worried about who's getting the most points. They're worried about winning games, and naturally KD's going to get more points if they're allowing him to really just play his game. And
yeah,
I think that's what you have to let KD do.
Hey, let's talk Raptors basketball, because I also think this is a fascinating situation developing in Toronto right now. The Raptors are said to be close to firing Dwayne Casey. We've heard that story for the last 24 hours. We've heard that they're going to blow that team up, that they're going to trade DeMar DeRozan. I don't like that. I don't agree with that. I think DeMar DeRozan is a really good basketball player. I can't explain how he got a flagrant two and got ejected last night. I think the whole team quit. I don't disagree that maybe Dwayne Casey's not the right guy right now. But trading DeMar DeRozan, I can't see doing that. You don't fire the player, you fire the coach. And that's the right thing to do here. So I don't know what you make of that, but if you're the Raptors, would you trade your guy, DeMar DeRozan?
I think if my mentality is blowing the team up, I'm definitely trading him. I mean, you're not going to blow a team up and not get as much value back as you can, right? Like, so if you're going to go into full rebuild mode and you're going to suck and tank and, you know, get up in the draft, yeah, you're going to trade him. And I think he'd have a lot of suitors on contending teams. I mean, nobody's going to take him into the franchise and have him be the guy after the way these playoffs turned out and really his inability to win when it matters most, right? But he's going to be the guy that goes in and he's going to play the Paul George role with Russell Westbrook. Like, he's going to be that second guy who can really dominate you in when he gets his chances.
Do you have an explanation for what happened to that team?
The Raptors?
Yeah.
I think they didn't get bench performance. Fred VanVleet all but said that. He said they choked. They did not perform.
But the rotation completely changed. Like, you didn't see Jakob Poeltl. You didn't see much of DeLon Wright. They completely changed the way they used the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Not playing DeLon Wright is a huge mistake, in my opinion. I mean, he's been one of the best guys off the bench for them. You know, VanVleet, there's no explanation for Van Vliet's lack of production. The guy, you can cry about your shoulder being sore. I don't really care. You're on the floor. You need to make shots. That's your role on the team.
If you're hurt, okay, can you play? Then you're not hurt. If you can't play, you're hurt.
It's the Kobe theory of life.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know what you say about DeRozan getting ejected. I don't know what you say about the dynamic between DeRozan and Lowry.
I think their dynamic is fine. Dude, they're best friends. You know, there may be times where it's awkward on the floor, but that stems from DeMar DeRozan's passiveness as a player, right? Like, he's not a guy, he's not like KD and LeBron where they're like, give me the ball, right? Like, I'm not saying he doesn't want the ball, but he's also not outright telling Kyle Lowry, give me the ball. I'm taking this game winner, right? Like, so when you have two guys who don't care about having the ball in the biggest moments, you end up with no guy in the biggest moment.
And I look at the numbers on DeMar DeRozan. He just wasn't the same guy. Did not make a three-pointer in the Cleveland series. In fact, did not even attempt a three-pointer in Game 3 or Game 4. 0 of 9 in this series. How can you call him a star when he shoots 29% from three in the playoffs? His playoff numbers were in the Washington series, which was a long series. That was a six-game series where they won two, lost two, and then won two, right? 17-37, 23-35, 32, 16. That was a dud in game six. Then he drops 22 and 24 in the Cleveland series, and then 8 and 13. 8 points in the game that LeBron won at the buzzer.
And that's why I say,
like, where did he go?
I don't know where he went. And that's why I say he'll never be the number one on a team after a performance like this. I mean, if he's going to be the number one on a team, it's going to be a team that sucks right now. Right? Like, if he went to the Lakers, he'd be the number one on that team until somebody else arrived. Right? Like, if LeBron doesn't go there, that's assuming that. But what I'm saying here is that when you don't perform in the postseason, your value obviously goes down, right? I mean, he's a great player in the regular season.
$27 million worth of a great player.
I know. He got paid. And what I'm saying here is that I think it's not an exaggeration to call the guy a little mentally soft. I mean, that's what...
Boy, his contract is ugly, too.
Well, he earned that contract initially, and now he's let him down.
He's got 3 years at $28 million a year left.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's not going to earn that money, because during the regular season, DeMar DeRozan's a star.
Yeah.
But he's 28 years old, so he's not getting younger. I don't know what you do with him. His contract likely makes him untradeable, because the Lakers are not going to pick up his contract.
Yeah.
Because I think they're very clearly focused on LeBron and Paul George. But now I wonder, there was a great Bleacher Report article today about, if you're a free agent, where do you want to go? Their top three free agent destinations, number three was the Jazz, number two was the Lakers, and number one, the Philadelphia 76ers. So I don't think it's a lock. A, if they win a championship, I can't see LeBron leaving Cleveland. I can't see that. The disaster that was January, February, March, okay, I can see LeBron leaving Cleveland. I don't think it's any lock at all that LeBron leaves Cleveland. Because I think if they win, why would he leave? Like, what sense would that make?
I don't know. I mean, we were talking about this before the show, and really came up when we were talking about it, like, what's his legacy if he leaves Cleveland? Like, you can see a clear path. If he stays in Cleveland, you win a championship this year.
That would be two there.
You know, really, what has he got? 5-6 years left? Maybe 7 or 8?
Probably got 5 years left.
Right. So, like, if he's got 5 years left and he plays all of those with the Cavs, he'll be remembered as a Cleveland Cavalier. Right? Through and through.
Yeah.
You know, and I think fans will forget the decision. I went to Miami and needed to win, and now I came back and I've won again. Right? Like, people will forget all that, and they'll just remember he had a ton of success standing on the scores table as a Cleveland Cavalier.
Yeah.
And I can really see that. I mean, that might be the smarter move, but if they don't win the finals, that's when he's got decisions to make.
But that franchise up until this playoff run was a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Tyronn Lue should have been fired. You know, Dan Gilbert's a terrible owner. They lost their best general manager, like all this stuff.
It's funny how winning fixes things.
It's exactly correct. You know, like, and I look at Toronto and I don't see a way to fix that because you have a guy in Kyle Lowry that's 32 years old and he's due to make $65 million over the next two seasons. How do you fix that?
You don't. You wait
You're
it out.
You're not fixing
you
that.
Wait it out.
You're not.
And that's what
know?
I say. I mean, yes, in a perfect world, they would tear the whole thing down, rebuild, trade out their assets, and start over. But
would they, though? See, I think, in my opinion, you have to sell out to get a whip-cracking coach. You got to sell out to go get a guy that's got a Jeff Van Gundy-style swagger. You got to sell out to get a guy who's won. Like, I don't think you, like, the hot college name is Jay Wright at Nova. Maybe that works because where did Kyle Lowry go to college? Villanova. So maybe that's the right thing to do. I don't know. That team's got problems. Valachunas should be way better than he is.
Well, look, I mean, Valachunas showed spurts of dominance on Tristan Thompson. I mean, outright dominance. But then he disappears for a long time, and I think part of that goes back to the rotation change that you were talking about. I'm not sure why Valachunas sat so much in that final game. I didn't really understand that. He comes back in.
I think
and
he's
just
not in shape. I think he's not in shape. Yeah. I think he's a big guy that's not a big guy like Anthony Davis is, where you're long and I would dare say lanky on Anthony Davis. Valachunas is a stout human being.
Yeah.
And I think that's an issue. But you look at a guy like Kyle Lowry, who's been around this league. Let's not forget, he's not like he's been a lifetime Raptor. You know, this is a guy that was played in Memphis and Houston and really didn't become the guy that he is now until he got to Toronto.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's interesting. I'm not so sure that I would blow that team up. I think I would absolutely make a change on the bench. You can't collapse the way they collapsed after being the best team in the Eastern Conference. You can't go out in a sweep to LeBron and the Cavs. Sorry, can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just... And now I guess the bigger question is, do we assume that it's Boston in the Eastern Conference Final?
Yeah.
Okay, so is Boston better than Cleveland?
I think that depends on the kind of game they are able to play
because
against Cleveland.
How far away is Cleveland from that team that was February, March, inconsistent, JR can't shoot, LeBron looks tired and disinterested?
I mean, I you're never going to see LeBron not be interested in the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen.
Wow. I think LeBron...
Not against the Eastern Conference. Against the Warriors, against a Western Conference team that is dominating them, we've seen LeBron at times where, hey, I'm not going to run back on defense on a really embarrassing turnover that shouldn't have been made. Like, situations like that where it's a blowout and he's still in the game, okay, then I could see that. But in the Eastern Conference, he's on a mission, dude. He is absolutely on a mission. I think the Celtics... The only way that they're really going to have a ton of success is by being physical with LeBron. I mean, that's what the Raptors didn't have, right? I mean, they got bullied that whole series. I mean, just mentally, physically, like the whole thing. And then I go to the Celtics and I'm thinking, well, they got a lot of pit bulls on that team. I mean, Terry Rozier is not intimidated by anybody. Marcus Smart is a gangster on the floor. Like, they don't care. They're going to get after you. And if they lose, they lose. But they're going to go down fighting hard.
Yeah, and I don't love the Tatum matchup for Cleveland. I don't love the Marcus Smart matchup. Like, who's guarding Marcus Smart?
I don't know.
Because you start looking around at their forwards, and you start looking around at how physical... Like, who's going to guard Al Horford? I don't know, because Tristan Thompson is not a great matchup.
Well, he wasn't a great matchup in this series either, right? But they survived. I think
Toronto's
LeBron...
But, bro, Toronto's been terrible. And by the way, I would remind you that Valachunas makes a tip. This is a different series. If he makes that tip at the end of game two, this is a different series.
If DeMar makes the shot.
This is a different series.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to diminish Cleveland at all. All I'm saying is... I don't think the Cavs are the lock against Boston that I've been hearing about.
No.
So I think that's very interesting. One other Cleveland note. What do you make of Rodney Hood refusing to enter the game in garbage time for LeBron James? Tyronn Lue asked him to check into the game, and he refused last night. And it really pissed his teammates off, so much so that he had a meeting with the general manager where he apologized and the Cavs are not going to fine him. What do you make of that?
I think he's a young player. I think he hasn't played for a contending team before. I mean, yeah, the Jazz, you know, were contending, I guess.
Oh, but totally different situation.
It's a different dynamic. You're playing with the best player in the world. I think his viewpoint and perspective was way off. He took it personally that Tyronn Lue was putting him in garbage time instead of putting him in when the game mattered. He didn't deserve to be in when the game mattered. He was terrible.
He's been terrible, yeah.
Right? Like, so you don't deserve those minutes. But, you know, when a coach puts you in garbage time in the playoffs and you're a younger guy, you got to take advantage of that. Like, you got to get in the most minutes in the playoffs that you can while LeBron James is still around. There's no guarantee, by the way, that he's going to stay. Right? Like, there's no guarantee of anything. So you have to assume the worst and hope for the best. So really what that means is you got to be a positive guy the rest of the way. You got to go in. You basically got to be a great role player on the team and do your job.
Yeah, and I think Rodney Hood's in a very difficult situation because he went from being one of the top dogs in Utah to really being an afterthought in game four of a monumental series for the Cavs.
Yeah.
And I think that's very difficult for a player of Rodney Hood's stature to deal with. He was brought there to really contribute three-point shooting, and he's not been able to do that. Kyle Korver has lapped him multiple times.
Yeah.
And I don't think Rodney Hood's ever been in that position. He was very good in college, inconsistent but pretty solid. Solid but inconsistent in Utah, and he's just been pretty subpar in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I think he doesn't know how to deal with failure yet. And yeah. His emotions got the best of him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's a great point you make about their ability to shoot the three ball without him. I mean, you know, it's in Utah, yeah. They needed that 3-point shooting, right? When you know, Gordon was still developing his 3-point shot, you know, he was more of a mid-range player. He didn't really have other people when he was in his prime in Utah. And so now he's come to the Cavaliers, a team that, you know, is really capable of shooting a high percentage from three, but doesn't do it a lot. You've got Korver, you've got J.R. Smith, you've got Kevin Love, right? Like, you've got these guys, and then you've got LeBron, right? So you've got four guys there that can really shoot it, and that means you're not needed. You are a help. You're not a need.
If you're going to shoot well, they're going to use you. But if you're shooting terribly, they're not going to use you.
Which he did. I mean, he's put up bad minutes, essentially. Like, he's not been good. And so that's why I say it is so ass backwards that he would be upset for being put in garbage time.
And he was, Rodney Hood was upset. And he apologized, and everybody seems to have moved on. But I don't know that you ever recover from that. My guess is they'll either trade or free agent that guy.
Maybe.
Would be my guess. I mean, but who knows what happens with LeBron.
Listen, he needs to have one more or a couple more positive moments in the playoffs. And I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. One other basketball note. LeBron versus Kobe versus Jordan continues to be a discussion on national radio shows. We were listening to ESPN this morning. We were listening to Colin Cowherd this afternoon, you know, listening to Romy, and just, it's a constant conversation right now because of this, I'm not going to say this period of rejuvenation in LeBron.
It's the game winning shot that started the whole conversation.
Yeah, I think so. This Toronto series has really started that. But what I say is that there is no comparison between Kobe, Jordan, and LeBron. They're all really good players. And the only way to say who's better than the other is a ring count. That's it. And I know I say this, I feel like, every day on this show. But this is why rings matter. LeBron James is not a lesser player than Kobe or Jordan. And pick the guy and put him against the other two. Jordan is, I think, by far and away recognized as the greatest player ever. Okay, but there's not a whole lot of separation between Kobe and LeBron, and Kobe and Jordan, and LeBron and Jordan, and there's not a whole lot of separation there.
Yeah.
They're all really good basketball players. One guy's got six rings, the other guys don't. So that makes it easy to delineate. Kobe's got five, and LeBron doesn't. That's really what this is about.
Yeah.
Because to go any further into the conversation, you're going to be talking down or insulting or chopping down a guy in LeBron James who's one of the greatest players I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think now is globally the best player.
Yeah, I mean, right now, today, he is the best player. I think the fall from the best player stature will be quick because that's typically how it works. Like, you know, he's been in the league 15 years now, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's Iverson, it's Shaq.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the best players. They just all of a sudden aren't the best players.
It's a cliff.
Anymore,
it's, you know? It's a, you step off the cliff because physically you can't do what you were able to do today. You're not going to be able to do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it just happens that way. But LeBron has something that Jordan and I think Kobe didn't have. He's engineering his body. And I think that's a huge difference. The way guys train, nutrition, core work, you know, this story about LeBron's back injury. He went to, I think it's David Alexander in Miami, who completely changed his regimen and turned him into a guy that trains his core every single day of his life. This back injury goes away. LeBron's now 67 and he's still dunking. Like, I mean, it's an amazing physical transformation that's happened with LeBron.
Yeah.
But I hate this conversation about, well, is LeBron catching and passing Kobe? No, he's not. They're all great players. The only way to rank them is by rings. And right now, I don't know that he ever gets to five.
No, I mean, I would have a tough time seeing him getting to five. I mean, he's, again, not to be a hater, he's lost too much. He's had the opportunity to get to five. He's just lost.
He had the opportunity to get to 10.
Yeah, and he's lost.
Yeah. And what about this Utah versus LA versus Philly conversation? If you're a free agent this summer, if you are LeBron James, Paul George, where do you want to go?
I think that discussion begins with a question, and that simply is, are you trying to build a legacy, or are you trying to win right now? And if you're LeBron James, you're trying to win right now, and you're trying to finish your career strong. If you're going to leave Cleveland, I'd go to Philly. And Ben Simmons can take a step back, frankly, because he hasn't earned the right to you know, play over LeBron, let's say, or get more ball time than LeBron gets, obviously. I think their dynamic would be really good because I think it would allow LeBron. I think it would allow LeBron to be off the ball as far as bringing the ball up. It would allow them to run great offense. And who's taking the last shot? LeBron James.
I think it's the wrong place and the wrong time for LeBron. Paul George? Sure. Paul's a younger player. Paul's still got things to prove and develop into. I like that move. LeBron James is the undisputed best player in the world. That doesn't help Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and that whole group of guys. I don't think that you can, like Markelle Fultz. Markelle Fultz will sit and watch if LeBron is on that team. And he needs to play because he showed us at the end of the regular season that he's got that potential. They're one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. They don't need LeBron James. And frankly, and I know it's crazy to say that LeBron going to a team doesn't make that team better, but I think the process and what this team's been through together is very unique. And it almost solders them together as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mess with that chemistry. Now, if you want to talk about any other team in the East, Boston, or, yeah, I mean, pick Toronto, the team you want. LeBronto, you know, whatever you want to say, LeBron James is a good fit.
Yeah.
Not for that Sixer team. I just think he's at a different point in his career.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't disagree with that, but I do disagree with the idea that LeBron James doesn't make a guy like Fultz better. I mean, whoever he plays with, he's making him better. I understand what you're saying is that, you know, by LeBron being there, he's taking minutes from other guys. I mean, him going to Philly would be the equivalent of Kobe's last years in L.A., right? Like, it's the same thing.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree
so
with that.
I just think, but LeBron, if he's trying to win right now, he's not going to go to L.A. I don't think, you know, he would need to know that Paul George is going to L.A. Like, he would need
LeBron
to
LeBron will be
that.
One of the last free agents to sign.
Which is, he
so,
should.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. LeBron will be one of the last free agents. Paul George, if he's smart, will go to L.A. because he, and I'm guessing that Paul knows this, Paul George makes any team he goes to a destination. If he goes to L.A. and LeBron goes to L.A. and they trade for Kawhi Leonard, now you're talking.
Yeah, I mean,
now,
they're a threat, but
You are, if LeBron and Paul George just go there on their own, and you've got Kuzma and Lonzo and Julius Randle and that young core of players, you're going to be probably the third best team in the West. You are going to be very close to the Houston Rockets. Very close. You can play inside. You can play outside. KCP is still in Los Angeles, who's a guy that gives you instant offense off the bench. I don't know what happens with Brook Lopez, or they've got pieces there that if they had two gold stars, I think they would give the Houston Rockets everything that they can handle. What they need is a lockdown defender. They need that's what
Paul George is that.
And I think that's why Paul George and LeBron make that team so good. Because every team in the West has a guy that needs to be locked down. Yeah. LeBron has historically done pretty well against Kevin Durant. I think Paul George could do just fine against a guy like James Harden. Like, I look at these guys in matchups. I think if they want to win, and I think if those two guys go there, I think they could compete at the top of the West next year. And then it will really depend. Like, does Kyle Kuzma continue to blossom? Because if he really grows in year two, they are probably better than Houston. They're not deep enough to be better than Golden State. But then again, Golden State's not going to be deep next year either. They're going to have some cap massaging to do.
Yeah.
With Durant's contract, and he says he's not taking a hometown discount. And the West in free agency is going to be very interesting. So if I'm LeBron James and Paul George, yeah, I absolutely look at L.A. as a destination. Utah's interesting because there's a stigma on Utah.
It's a tiny market compared to the other ones.
Right, but if you want to go and win the West, Utah's not a bad place to go. You know, if you want to go there and if you legit want to go to the NBA Finals for the next 3 years and you're LeBron and Paul George, they could fit that into their cap. Absolutely they can.
Yeah, but we all know that's not going to happen.
No, it's probably not. But the question is, what's the desirable market?
I think it's LA and Philly. I think it's LA, Philly, and if you're LeBron, I think Houston's in the conversation, but I don't think he would go to Houston.
I don't think he would either. I think LeBron needs to go and build it on his own. I think
he's running out of time to build it on its own. Like, right. He's got to understand
but
that.
But that's why I think LA is such a good destination for him.
Yeah.
Because and don't forget about his kids. Bronny, his son Bronny, LeBron Jr. is a really good prospect, but he's young and he needs, you know, he's coming into his high school years. He needs to be in a basketball hotbed, and that's Los Angeles. The Greater Valley area, Southern California on the whole, is great for high school basketball. Scottie Pippen's kid is there, Jason Williams' kid is there. Like, there's so much talent there right now that. Yeah, look, hey, Melo Ball should still be there.
Oh, 100%. You know,
LaMelo should still be there, yeah, on a state championship team in Chino.
But you're telling me you're taking LaMelo over Bronny?
I think that's closer than you think it is. Because in high school, LaMelo Ball is an absolute stud. He's a star.
Yeah.
He's got handles. He can shoot from just about anywhere. In Lithuania, when he's playing against grown-ass men, he's not a superstar. Yeah. He's a 16-year-old kid that's got to eat a bunch of pasta. In high school, he's absolutely a star.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
Make sure you find us online, themonteeshow.com. Matt Harvey's a Cincinnati Red.
So disappointing on so many levels. I can't even begin to describe the embarrassment that this is. Like,
okay, explain it. What do you mean by that?
I just think, how is it that Matt Harvey didn't go to a contender? How is it that, you know, anybody in the NL West didn't take a flyer on this guy? How is it, because New York wanted a catcher and Devin Masuraco was the fit? Come on, dude.
And Masuraco's always been an average catcher.
Yeah, it's not like he's some elite catcher or some great, like, catcher.
But they need a guy who can catch quality pitching.
Right, and there's a bunch of dudes out there who can do that.
But the Giants don't have that guy. Right? Because the Giants were, but yeah, but he's a backup. He's a number two. Devin Masuraco, depending on you know, how you look at Masuraco, Devin Masuraco can be a number one. He's a Real Muto type catcher. He's a Nick Hundley type catcher. Right? But if you're the San Francisco Giants, are you giving up Nick Hundley? I don't think you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you really need that dynamic.
Look, all I'm saying is it is you lost today. The NL West lost today. I mean,
I agree with 100%. I
mean, you guys got run, you know, and I don't know if they just didn't have enough to offer, if the Reds just swooped in and were like, yep, we're getting this done before it even gets out there.
I think the Mets wanted the trade. The Mets wanted the trade so that they don't have to pay Matt Harvey, right? And that's what they did. They didn't want him to go to free agency. And I think it was a really smart move.
Why is this a good move for the Reds, though? That's what I'm trying to understand.
What do they have to lose? I mean, just bring a dude to the yard, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, what do you have to?
It's not a winning move right now for the Reds. The Reds are not in a position.
Because they're terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the Reds are not in a position to be acquiring guys like Matt Harvey, who are disgraced from the New York Mets, but could still give you quality innings this year if he ever figures it out. The Mets are a team that are bad. They're going to be bad. You know, they have a couple of nice players in Homer Bailey and, you know, whoever, you know, a few other, the Vados of the world, like Cozart. Like, they have a nice mix of players, but they're not a good team, especially in the Central.
Yeah.
And so I'm just sitting here wondering, how is it that teams like the Giants and the Dodgers and you know, even the Diamondbacks could use him, right? Like, they could have used him.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Cubs could have used him.
Cubs could have used him, too.
Like, I would love to have seen a team like, and I say this about the Padres, I feel like, every day. The Padres, the Cubs, the Dodgers.
But listen, the Padres are in the same position, you know, that the Reds are, in the sense that, you know, yeah, the Padres are in a better position. Not the same, but a better position. They're not ready to sign a guy like Harvey yet.
But that's my point. You don't have to be in the position. You just need, Matt Harvey needs a year to rehab his shoulder. He needs to get stronger. He needs to gain touch back on the baseball. Like, he needs to pitch in low leverage situations and be somebody that's almost irrelevant, right? Like, send him to extended spring training. You know, send him back out to Arizona or Florida. Just let him rehab. Let him get his head right. That's what the Padres, the Dodgers didn't have the luxury of doing that. And yeah, certainly in a trade market, the Dodgers were never a possibility because of the luxury tax.
Right.
But if he'd become a free agent, this would have been a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And I give the Reds a lot of credit.
I give the Mets a lot of credit. I mean, that's a really smart move that they were able to get that done. I mean, it's very savvy, for sure.
Well, we'll see if Mesoraco is a guy that is able to, A, stay healthy, because the 1 year that he really caught a lot of games, he was an all-star, and he hit 25 home runs. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he hasn't hit very much because he's playing 18 games. You know, he played 56 games last year, 16 in 2016, 23 in 2015.
Yeah.
He's got to play.
Yeah.
And so if he's healthy and can stay healthy, it's a good pickup for the Mets because he can frame.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that comes to mind, and what that tells me, is they're probably going to trade Homer Bailey. That's what comes to mind. Like, and what are you doing with a guy like Joey Votto? But here nor there, I think this is a good move for the Mets. The Mets absolutely won today.
They won.
The NL West, I think I agree with you, the NL West lost. I'm just glad he didn't go to the Cardinals, because the Cubs are absolutely in hell right now. You know, like, I don't know how you explain where the Cubs are. Jason Hayward on the 7-day disabled list for a concussion. Javier Baez has a bad groin now. Yu Darvish has this, you know, influenza thing, so he's on the disabled list.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're getting their ass kicked, let's be honest. I mean, the injuries are not great for them right now, but again,
thank God for the Marlins.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing the Marlins right now. I think, again, just hold your water, right? Like, just don't be abysmal. Don't be the team that, like, just falls apart for 2 weeks at a time. Just keep working at it, and I think they'll be fine. I mean, Bryant and Rizzo are heating up. They are starting to hit again. Like, they're not hitting, they're starting to hit again. And so that's a good sign. But again, I'm with you. They need the rest of the team to start hitting before they get cooking again. And again, pitching is pitching. You're either going to get good pitching or you're going to get bad pitching.
Yeah.
There's nothing you're going to do about it.
Yeah, and it's Sang pitching tonight for the Cubs against the Marlins. So we'll see what happens. That game just got underway. But Anthony Rizzo was out of the lineup last night. They score, what did they score, 14 runs or something like that?
Yeah.
He's out of the lineup when they break out. Chris Bryant hits a home run. Baez hits a home run. Like, they rake last night. And we'll see, because Urania, who they hit hard on opening day, is pitching for the Marlins tonight. So you would hope that, you know, and I like this lineup. This is the Cubs lineup that if I have to deal with Ben Zobrist, okay, fine. He's playing right field tonight and batting leadoff. But then it's Schwarber, Bryant, Rizzo, Caratini catching today, which I hate. You know, LaStella, Russell, Happ, Sang, these guys can all bang. But this idea, and this is being heavily floated now, that Manny Machado will be a Cub. Do you like it or hate it?
I mean, I like it. I mean, if you're trying to win a World Series this year, I really like it. I think if you're trying to sign, if Machado is a target for you alongside Bryce Harper, I really like it. Because if Machado comes in here and gives you 90 to 100 games, let's say, and and he likes what happens and they have success, and let's say they go and win, let's say they win the NL pennant. But they don't win the World Series, that'll look good for Manny. I think he would come back. I think they would be able to negotiate with him a little bit. I mean, sure, you're going to have to sign him to a big deal, but you'd at least have the idea that, yeah, we won with you. Come back, and we'll go after it again. And we're going to go and try and get Bryce Harper, but we're going to have to work some things out before we can do that. So I like it, but I don't know. They would need to know if he's at all interested in playing long-term for real. Like, the rumors have gone around. I get that. You know, he's got best friends on the team allegedly and everything, but it's one thing to have best friends.
Albert Almora Jr.
It's another thing to sign a contract long term.
Well, and the Cubs will pay him. I think the problem for the Cubs is they're not going to want to rent him. And I think that could ultimately be the difference between trading for Machado and not. If Machado would agree to a long term extension, a 5-year extension that allowed the Cubs to add his payroll and or add to their payroll with his contract and still chase Bryce Harper. You know, somebody today said that Bryce is going to get $500 million. No. He's not getting $500 million.
I don't think he gets four. I think he gets upper threes.
I absolutely think that the Cubs would pay him $380 to $400.
Yeah.
For 10 years. It's a Pujols-style contract that ultimately kicks you in the ass.
Yeah.
For the first half of that contract, Bryce Harper is going to be a Hall of Famer. And you hope that every year after that, year one through five, you hope that Bryce Harper is a Hall of Famer. And year 5 through 10, you hope that he is really good. But it's Albert Pujols limping his way to 3,000 hits with the Angels. That's what scares you. And I think Bryce Harper is different because, again, much like LeBron James, Bryce Harper is an engineered athlete. This is a guy that's built to play baseball. And so I like that. But if I'm gonna lose Bryce Harper because I'm not going to pay both of them, which I don't think the Cubs are in, their owner, the Ricketts family, has already said they're willing to pay, I'm not doing that deal. Here's the other question. If you rent Manny Machado, are you willing to give up Addison Russell, who is just entering arbitration years, under club control, for Manny Machado as a rental player?
Probably not.
Are you willing to give up a Kyle Schwarber?
Potentially, because I think if you're gonna go after Harper, you're gonna get that bat back.
Well, But here's the other thing. He's a really good fit in the American League, Schwarbs is, because he doesn't really have a position. He's not a catcher, and he's done better in left field because he's lost weight and he's more athletic now. But he's a designated hitter. But Baltimore's got Chris Davis, who they say they're going to trade, and Adam Jones, and,
yeah,
you know, Scope now that he's healthy. And
yeah, they got a lot of talent there.
They do. My question is, if you are Baltimore, how are you not asking for Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I would ask for him.
Teams' demands are you know, different depending on the team and depending on their money situation, what their plan is. Like, you know, gauging a team's demands is so difficult nowadays, right? Because you never know, you know, what the GM's goal is for the next 5 years. You just have no idea.
Yep, I agree. Hey, let's end the show today talking about Thanos.
Thanos.
We had a tragedy in our family today.
I'm pretty broken.
This was a tough day for us, and that's because our Xbox One power supply broke. So we are not currently capable of playing Fortnite. We will remedy that in short order. But that tragedy kind of gave us a little room to realize that Thanos' addition to Fortnite has been a complete waste of time.
Like, bust.
It's cool. So how this works is Thanos from the Avengers.
Infinity War.
Which we saw over the weekend. Graded 1 to 5, with 5 being the best.
I got 3.
Yeah, 3.5, right?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's breaking all comic book records. It's billions of dollars already. Like, it's amazing. So Thanos is a central figure in the Infinity Wars. And his main weapon is this glove with 5 crystals on it that gives him all kinds of powers. In Fortnite, it gives him the power to eviscerate people playing against him. And what happens is, in Fortnite, you jump off the bus, for those of you who know Fortnite, and essentially what happens is you get dropped off of a bus onto an island. So a bus attached to a hot air balloon floats over an island, and you can jump off at any point you want. Well, the difference with the Thanos model is that when you jump off, the Eye of the Storm is already formed. And what happens is a meteor hits the island and drops Thanos' glove. And it's just a fight to the death, A, to get that glove. And then when somebody does have Thanos' glove, they have the power to jump very high in the air. Essentially, you're flying, and they drop this death ray on everybody they want to kill. But you can also kill Thanos. And then when you kill him, you can pick up his glove.
Yes.
It's a battle royale, fight to the death, you and 99 other players. The last man standing wins.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy it that much.
In theory, it sounds really fun. And honestly, killing Thanos is fun. Like, you know,
it is.
When you get in, when you actually are able in the game to get to that point, it's fun, right? Like,
yes.
You're shooting Thanos, you're getting health back for shooting
him. I almost had him.
Like,
I had him down to 40% this morning.
Yeah, like, so it's a nice little challenge. But the dynamic in the game changes a lot because the Eye of the Storm is formed already. The storm moves a lot more quickly because they're forcing everybody to play against Thanos, you know, and they're forcing conflict. And so it changes the strategy element of the game. And so that's why I think we didn't enjoy it as much. It's fun for like 5-6 games, but I didn't enjoy it overall.
And then we were back to the norm.
Yeah. And, so, then our power supply died.
It's only $30 to replace it. But we had Xbox
360
with the Red Ring of Death. We experienced that like 3 times, sent it back to Microsoft. They sent us new units, all that good stuff. Xbox One has been absolutely, knock on wood, and I won't so my dogs don't freak out, but Xbox One has been absolutely problem-free. We've had this unit for going on 4 years now.
Yeah.
Absolutely problem-free until today when the power supply died.
And it's not like that's some, you know, oddity.
No, it's 30, like I said, it's $30. It fries electronics, which is right down the street from our house.
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
It's no big deal. It's no problem.
Do you like Fortnite?
Yeah, I do.
Am I too competitive?
I think yes and no. Yes, you're too competitive in the sense that you get frustrated when you die quickly in certain situations. You know, and I think, you know, killing and being killed in Fortnite is such an art and it's such a delicacy almost where you have to understand that, you know, if you don't have shield, if you don't have as good a gun, like there's so many things that go into living and
sure.
dying in Fortnite that it can be frustrating in the moment. But there's also things like, you know, are you as good of a builder as the person you're trying to kill?
Yeah, building in Fortnite is critical.
Yeah, it is the essential key to winning in Fortnite.
And we just figured that out in the last 10 days.
Yeah, and we just figured out that you can change the configuration on your controller to be more
builder pro,
like to be more efficient.
Thank
building.
You, the D.
So
our friend, the D, whose name literally is the D.
Yeah.
I'm not making that up. The D taught us that you can arrange your
remote.
And
so, like, we've been trying to get used to the remote configuration to build more quickly, and
yeah.
so we've lost several times because we're playing on the old configuration.
But Fortnite for you is fun, and it's fun for me.
Yeah.
But I am way too competitive as a human being. Like, we play basketball in the morning, and it pisses me off that I don't make every shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
it's like, for me, like, losing in Fortnite is like, all right, great, another game, let's go. You know?
That's how it is. I'm louder, I'm more boisterous, I'm more passionate about everything I do. I'm pissed for like 30 seconds when I lose. And then I'm on to the next.
Yeah, but I think like it's when we play Fortnite like for let's say 2 hours in a row, right? Like
yeah, which we should never do.
You know, like I think when you have 5, 6, 7 games in a row where things aren't going your way, like you're like you literally once said, "Oh, I'm never playing Fortnite again." And then, like, 10 minutes later, came back and played Fortnite. And it's just
but
like...
I'm not... I don't throw remote controls.
No, you don't go, you're not a rager.
No.
You just get mad.
I just get annoyed.
Yeah.
But I'm like that in everything that I do. If I can't win at everything I'm doing, I don't want to do it. Whether that's a radio show, whether that is car buying, whether that is shoe buying.
Well, car buying's fun, though.
Like, it is fun. It pisses me off that I didn't get the orange box LeBrons. You know, like, that's frustrating to me. Because
yeah.
I'm competitive.
Yeah.
So, whatever. It's fine. You ready to graduate from ASU?
I'm not graduating from ASU.
Oh, that's right. You didn't go to college.
Yeah, I'm not cool enough.
Yeah, get a job.
Right.
Anyway, all right, that's it. Make sure you find us online, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud. It's all The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.